Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Do you know what the episode is? Because I do. It's Total Recall from 1990 and the weird Total Recall from 2012.
And before anyone ats us and says these are both adaptations of We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, first of all, the book is not called Total Recall, and if you were going to make a separate adaptation of it, why would you call it the same as the one from the 90s? And second of all, Philip K. Dick is not credited on the IMDb of the second Total Recall movie. The people who wrote the screenplay of the 1990 version are credited as based on a story by.
Yeah.
And also, it gets even further away from the actual story than the 1991 did. So it's definitely a remake, and not even a particularly good one.
No, there are some aspects that I really, really like about the 2012 one, which I'll get into later.
I came out of the 2012 movie with one burning question.
For me or for the audience?
Both. For the world, for the ether.
Okay.
How do you take a sci-fi action movie and make it so boring?
Which movie did they take?
So they remade the 1991.
Yeah, which is a classic, absolute over-the-top, gorgeous movie.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of practical effects. There's lots of humor in it. There's also lots of action. There's a sci-fi kind of thriller stuff going on. And then they remade it and just made it really boring. Like, excruciatingly boring. Like, scenes that went on for so long that by the time the scene ended, you forgot why the scene was even in there. and nothing was established or nothing happened. And it was like, the first time that happened, I was like, well, that was they needed to get an editor in and fix that scene up. But then it happens like six or seven more times. There's a car chase that I think went on for so long that like, I was like, are we just watching like a car movie now? Like, what's happening? It just stopped being like there's no intensity. There's no like tension at all. You're not like anticipatory. You're just like, can we finally end this scene? Like, is anything going to happen? Why? Why are all the scenes so long? Why do they? It's like they thought out these scenes and were like, this could be a cool scene, and then just let them go on for like three times the length they should have been, and with no editing. And I don't understand. They needed a script editor and they needed like a film editor to just like cut it and make it like exciting.
I completely agree with you. The 1991 has brilliant, like, dialogue between characters. I think my favourite scene in the entire thing is when Arnie's character, Quaid, walks into the last resort, which is like a weird mutant prostitution.
Yeah, there's like no mutants in the remake except for the lady with the three boobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Which she's part of this town that's like marginalized because all the mutants live there, you know, on Mars in the 1991. Yeah. But then there's none of that exists in the 2012 one. They don't even go to Mars.
Okay, can I?
They go to Australia, which I guess is the like Earth equivalent of going to Mars.
Just, you want to keep going to get it all out? Because every time I go to say something, you just want to interrupt me with rants. I've never seen you this passionate about, like, because you're physically animated. Normally you're, like, angry, but, like, at this moment you're, like, physically animated.
I'm just thinking about, I do want to specify, so people, you know, if people want to argue with us, we did watch the director's cut of the 2012 version, but I checked and it's like only 10 minutes longer, so it doesn't explain
all the scenes. All the scene is just one minute longer.
Yeah, every scene is just 2 minutes longer. No, and I know that they added in all the stuff with Ethan Hawke for the director's cut. None of that was in the theatrical release. Where it's like you get to see that he was, you know, that he also changed his face. It wasn't just Because in, you know, in the original one, they just wipe his memory.
Yeah.
But in this one, they also change his face when they change his identity.
Can I go back to what I was saying? Thank you. So in the scene where he walks into the last resort and Melina walks up to him and says, hi, Hauser, see you're still bulging, then grabs his genitals and says, what have you been feeding this thing? And he says, blondes. It's just one of those lines that gets me every single time. The Arnie just has far much more like screen presence and charisma. And it's not fair because like, none of the cast in the 2012 one are bad.
Yeah, it's a great cast.
They're all fantastic actors. And I just feel like, one, you're 100% right. So scenes play out for way too long.
Yep.
They are way more, like, there is such an, I think the director and the editor have, like, this massive boner for, like, it's not even angle, it's not even cinematography. It is just how long scenes play out for where nothing happens.
Yeah, it's so annoying.
Like trying to build intensity and this ideal that you're going to like build up to something. But then the scene is just, the ending never deserves it. It's like the scene, like the whole thing where he gets like the scar on his hand.
Yeah.
Which is like this key element of the entire movie.
And also, yeah, sorry, you finish what you're saying, but I have a big beef with that scene.
So the whole sequence is they're running away, the police are shooting at them, they hide in this thing and they're like trying to escape, and then they confess their love to each other and kiss in slow motion, and they're all gross and dirty and bleedy, and then this is the whole sequence of like how do they get out, and they're gonna like lower themselves into water. Which doesn't make sense because they're, like, in a building. And it seems to be, like, a river that's underneath them. And then he gets shot through the hand and they both get shot through the hand. And it's very much like, oh, my God, you've got a matching scar. And it's so dumb.
It also fucking ruins the entire premise of the movie. Because that is our opening scene.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be a dream sequence, right? And in the original, it's him on Mars. It's very, he's just like out and about. It's very vague. He like falls down a thing and his mask cracks and then his eyes start to bulge. He starts to decompress and then he wakes up. And it's all very kind of like disjointed and dreamlike.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole point of the movie, and the whole point, well, not really the point of the story, but the whole, in the adaptation, not so much in the actual short story where it is just, it's pretty much confirmed, I believe, that he was a secret agent.
Yeah.
But in the movie, the whole point is you don't know at any point what is real.
Yeah.
Because you're presented with two different realities. One is that he was a secret agent. They wiped his memory. He went to this recall place and it triggered this thing where they discovered that he was actually a secret agent, and then they thought he had blown, his cover had been blown, and they came to try and kill him.
Yeah.
And he spends the rest of the movie like trying to get away. And the other is that he had a totally normal life, went to recall and asked to be, you know, given this fake memory of being a secret agent. And then the entire rest of the movie is this fake memory of being a secret agent.
Yeah.
That falls apart entirely when your opening dream sequence is like 10 minutes long and incredibly detailed and very specific and clearly happened. Because we know from the opening scene that this guy was a secret agent who had his memory wiped.
Yeah.
That's it. The whole rest of the movie becomes pointless. Because we know that that's what's happened.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 1990 version, you have this disjointed like dream and you kind of barely get to see the lady in it, and then you get a woman that you're like, is it her? Is it not her? Is it, you know, she's matching this description he gave these people, but is he also projecting the dream person onto it? You know, is this a real person? Is this someone he's made up? Is this AI generated? You know, you don't really know.
And it's one of the moments in the, when he's in recall, when Arnie's in recall, and one of the guy in the background at the point where they're like strapping him into the chair goes, "Blue skies on Mars. Haven't seen that one." And you're like, even though that you think that he, like, you know, you get the girl, you save the Mars, you know, all of that, like, all the, like, lead up to it, and you have no idea if, like, any of it is real.
Yeah, and it's even, like, there's a moment in both where they send someone, you know, or, like, they send someone into him, and you don't know, has this person been sent in by the military to try to convince him he's gone crazy, or have they been actually sent into his memory to try to convince him to come out of the dream? And in the original, it is a doctor, and he's like, hey, I'm in here, you know, and everything he describes, so he says, like, you know, if you shoot me, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It all happens.
Yeah.
So you're like, is that clever, you know, and I mean, it is clever foreshadowing either way, but, like, is it just clever foreshadowing for film, or is it the doctor knows what's going to happen and then this happens because it's all in his head? Whereas in the other one, it's like, just, it's just also another scene that just goes on forever. It's just a weird negotiation scene with
Harry,
his former workmate, who's just like, everything he says, he's like, well, it's because you made it like this in your mind.
Why are you wearing a bulletproof vest?
Because you want to protect me.
Trying to protect me, man.
And then he, like, gets the gun off the girl, and then he's like, gives it back to her, like, if I was real, would I do that? Would I have done that? And you're like, what are you talking about? Just someone just shoots someone. Like, I don't even care at this point who gets shot. Like, just shoot yourself and then end the movie. And I would have been a better movie, because at least it would have just fucking ended. And again, like you said, not the fault of any of the actors. They're good actors. But, like, my God, it just kept going. And there's so many. And here's the thing also, is that these scenes, we've already discussed, so many scenes are way too long to begin with. They should have been edited, both from a script perspective and also from a film perspective afterwards. But also, like, the editing that they do is they put them in slow motion. They just, like, insert slow-mo, and you're like, this movie is already dragging on so long that I think I've been watching it for 7 hours when it's, like, a two-hour movie. And then you're going to put it in slow-mo? Why? Why?
I think it was the 2012. I think that's the issue. I think movies that came out in 2012 were very...
Have you seen any of the Underworld movies?
Yes.
Are they like this? It's the same guy who made them.
In a way...
Yeah, is he just remaking Underworld? He also cast his wife, Kate Beckinsale, as the lady in it. And even that ruins the illusion, because there's, like, the... When he has the dream, right, in both versions of the movie, he has told his wife, who either is his wife or is, like, a plant to keep him pacified, he tells his wife about the recurring dream. In the 1991, he has also told her about the woman in the dream before, and she's like, oh, is she there? And then plays it off as like, oh, you know, I'm just jealous that you're dreaming about this lady, even if you don't remember her name. But either it's this playful jealousy thing with the wife, or it's a hint that she's actually trying to get the information to find out what he actually remembers. Whereas in in the 2012 one, the wife is like, and tell me, like, he doesn't tell her about a person. He just says he's on his own. And she's like, and tell me, who's the other person in the dream? There's another person in the dream. You're dreaming about another person. Who's that other person? He's like, no, it's just me. And then he tells his friend about it. And he's like, and who's the girl in the dream? And he's like, I didn't say there was a girl. I was just on my own. He's like, the girl in the dream. Who's the girl in the dream? And you're like, why do all these people know that there's a girl with him in the dream? It's because they're trying to identify who she is so they can find her.
Yeah.
Because it is real. Because... they just decided to destroy all mystery of the movie.
Yep.
It feels, it's not as extreme, because it still has moments, but it does feel a little bit like the remake of Dawn of the Dead, where they were like, I like the look of this movie, but I have totally misinterpreted every message in the movie. It's like they just didn't even realize that there was supposed to be a mystery to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though in the original, even the 1991, they are playing it up to, like, schlockiness for Arnie because they cast Arnie. And they're like, let's put in more humor, make it more light for Arnie because that's what he's good at.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got one-liners and gratuitous violence.
Genuinely, they rewrote the script for him because they were like, we need to play into his strengths because that's what's going to make this a good movie, which is 100% what you do. Play into your actor's strengths. Absolutely. Yeah. But it's like the people who rewrote it for the 2012 one watched that movie and somehow entirely missed that the whole point of the movie is even at the end, you're not sure which thing is real.
Yeah.
It's like Blade Runner. I mean, it's a Philip K. Dick. Every Philip K. Dick thing essentially boils down to like making you question what is real, what isn't real, and not letting you actually know the answer. But in an intriguing way rather than a frustrating way. And then they just missed the point of that. So they just like started out the movie being like, oh, by the way, this is the answer to the riddle. And you're like, I didn't even know there was a riddle yet. And you're telling me the answer to it at the beginning?
I really like the Arnie one.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
All the lines in it are great.
Yeah. By the way, for the record, for our listeners, I had never seen either of these movies before.
Well, I can tell which one you like.
Yeah, but this isn't... just so people know that this isn't like that I'm a diehard fan of the 1990 Total Recall and I've been watching it for years or whatever, and I'm annoyed about it. You know what I mean? It's not like I love this one film and I don't like what they've done with the remake. I have literally never seen either of these movies before. I had no investment going in. I will say I do like Philip K. Dick, but I haven't read We Can Remember It For You Wholesale. I've read several of his other works. I think my favorite is Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, which is also like you don't know what the hell's going on in it. And in terms of adaptations of his work, I think the most true to the book adaptation I've seen is A Scanner Darkly.
Yeah.
Because his works are just insane. All of his books, all of his short stories that I've read anyway, are like, would be incredibly difficult to actually put to screen as described.
Do you want to finish this podcast and go watch Scanner Darkly?
No, not really. I don't feel like that.
You don't feel like that?
I don't feel like that.
Fair enough.
I was telling you about this before, but I still think regularly about the time that me and my sibling went to watch a movie that we saw on Netflix that just sounded cool. And we ordered Chinese food, and then when we were like getting our Chinese food ready, I was saying, oh, the plot of this movie sounds really like this short story I read once, and then proceeded to tell them the entire plot of the short story, including the big twist ending. And then when we started watching the movie, it started up with, based on a short story by Philip K. Dick. And I was like, well, I'm sorry. I have ruined this movie for you. In fairness, the film adaptation for that one did actually change the ending from the book, so it wasn't as big of a we both got to be surprised by the ending, but I just remember being like, well, shit, I should have looked into that before I spoiled the whole plot for you.
So the part I actually enjoy about 2012's Total Recall is I really like the aesthetic, like the scenery and the like. All the things in the world are cool.
Mm.
I really like the cyberpunk, like, overpopulated, like, kind of weirdly pod, but not quite pod, because they all seem to be made out of concrete, like, block houses that are, like, stacked on each other in weird angles.
Mm.
There's a very much, like, a Southeast Asian vibe going on with, like, the water and neon. And...
Yeah, so that was the plan originally, and it is kind of in there a little bit. It's divided, it's Earth, but most of Earth has become uninhabitable, and the inhabitable parts are Northern Europe and Australia.
Yeah.
Which are now the United Federation of Britain, is that right?
Yeah.
And they've just called the other one The Colony, but it was originally called New Asia.
Yeah.
So the production design really reflects that, to the point that the bank he goes to is the First Bank of New Asia.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though that's not what the place is called anymore, it's just called The Colony. But that is the look they were going for, is this kind of, you know, almost Southeast Asian.
Yeah, it's very much like,
you know,
cyberpunk Singapore.
Yeah.
Like, and very much like the walled city kind of vibe of just like everything is interconnected, and there's like the like crime and prostitution and like homelessness and drug use are all like really smushed in together. Mm. And I really enjoy the vibe of like the stuff that happens in the colony. But like for a place that's supposed to be where like, you know, this oh, space is the issue, and that's why they have this weird thing where you, instead of like fixing anything, they were like, oh, I've got a great idea. Let's dig a giant fucking hole all the way to the other side of the planet and put a lift system in there so we can get colonists from down there to us to do our labor.
Yeah, and it's very like, strange.
Okay, so whoever wrote this didn't do any research whatsoever because it's physically impossible for a start. Because rocks do weird things at a certain point. Mm. When you're like, rock is rock. No, it's not. Not when it's really, really hot and under pressure. It does all sorts of weird stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of magical metal the whole system's made out of. The fact that it wouldn't work because eventually the lift would slow down. So you'd fall really, really quickly, right? And you'd get all the way to the core, and then gravity would switch, and then you'd go over to the other side.
But you wouldn't get to the top.
Well, you wouldn't get to the top.
But they are using, like, magnets to push things as well.
Oh, they're using magnets. Cool. Like, magnets, when they get superheated, don't work anymore.
I know, but that's how their vehicle system is working. What I thought was really strange is that they have, like, the whole car chase on these magnet rail cars, and then they fall down onto and crush like just regular cars on the road as well. Yeah. It's like, why are these still here?
But like in Minority Report with the really cool like vertical like road things that and are then like, all like self-driving cars. You just like get in and go to wherever you're wanting to go, but then all of a sudden like you're looking out your side mirror and there's like a Ford Focus also there. Yeah, like, what the hell?
Yeah, very strange. It's weird that, like, you know, the whole kind of conceit is, you know, in both, I believe, the short story or the novelette and in the 1990 movie, that, like, when he's had his memory wiped, he's been relocated to Earth because being on Mars would trigger the memories or whatever, or, you know, and also people would recognize him. And not only, obviously, is that not in the remake because they just cut Mars out of the equation altogether, but also, like, it's not even like he's located on only one of these places. Like, he lives in the colony but works in Britain. So he's, every single day, he's going between the two. Well, I mean, I guess they're trying to get past that by giving him a face change.
Yeah.
But it feels like it doesn't make any sense. Like, if you want him to not be where the whole thing happened, then don't have him purposely commuting there every day.
Yeah, it also seems very weird that, like, you're having, because the whole point, like, the crash course on how capitalism works, you don't manufacture stuff in countries by shipping the workers to the country.
Yeah.
You ship the manufacturing to the place where the cheap labor is. So why in the hell are they coming to work every day via a magnetic core lift thing to work in a factory to then go back home again the exact same way?
Yeah, and also that, like, it's not even that he's traveling to work in the place where, like, I don't know, because, like, I don't know, because they have split it again weirdly, that the resistance is in the rich place rather than the resistance being in the colonized place.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense, first of all, because the resistance would be in the place that is being, like, under control of this dictator or whatever.
Yeah.
As opposed to being in the United Federation. That doesn't make any sense. But then also that, like, all the people, like the brothel or whatever, you know, where there should be mutants, I guess, are in the place that he lives.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't go there. But the lady isn't a person working in a brothel anymore. She's like the daughter of the resistance guy. And the resistance guy isn't a mutated fetus anymore. He's just like a
Quaid.
Dude. Also, that's another reason that you know it's a remake and not a not an adaptation, is that his name isn't Quaid in the book. His name is Quayle, and they changed that in the 1990 version because at the time, the Vice President of the United States was named Quayle.
Oh, I thought it was because Annie wouldn't be able to pronounce Quayle.
Quayle?
Yeah.
No, it was because literally they didn't want people to be like, wait, did you name this guy after the guy from... After the Vice President? And they'd have to be like, no. I think it was it George H.W. Bush who was in power at the time? And his president, his VP might have been Quayle. And like a similar name to Doug as well, like Dan Quayle or something. I don't remember exactly. But like, that was why they changed the name. And then they kept the changed name as opposed to the book name in the remake.
There are so many quotable lines from the original.
Yeah.
And I cannot remember, even though we watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
I cannot remember a single piece of dialogue.
Now, I will say, some of that may be because you did fall asleep for some of it.
That's because it was boring.
I was going to say, I was kind of jealous because I wished I could sleep through it. But you've at least seen it before, whereas I hadn't. So if I slept through it, it would have been pretty bad.
I think I've seen it. This would be the third time I've seen it now.
Because
I think I saw it the first time and was like, oh, it's not bad. And then I watched it again and went,
it is bad.
It's not bad.
Actually.
it's just nothing.
That's the thing. It's not like it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
It's just.
The visual effects are great. The acting's great. The visual effects, not the actual, like.
I would say, I don't know if the visual effects are great. I would say production design is pretty good.
The robots look cool. The cinematography's, like, where it's not in weird. Like, the overarching stuff is fine.
It's all very... I feel like it was all very, like...
art direction.
Chrome. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
It's all very... just boring to look at.
Okay.
It's just monochrome. It's like they just, like, erased color from it.
Where I think the original's more brutalism.
Mm. And also all practical effects.
Yeah.
Which is great because they stand the test of time.
Yeah. The architecture in the original is very brutalism. Like, there's a lot of just, like, exposed metal and concrete. Very little neon. I think the other great thing I feel about the other one is everybody's a jerk.
Yeah. I'm feeling that's, like, kind of true in both, right?
Yeah, but I feel like it just lives up to the charm, like... Everybody's got poppy one-liners. Everyone's kind of a jerk to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The overacting is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it is an Arnie movie where he's just, like, screaming and killing people.
Yeah, and that's just also just knowing fashion. Your actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And being like, how can we rewrite the script to make it, like, cool for Arnie?
Yeah.
I think, do you know what's terrible is that, like, I feel like this movie, the 2012 remake, probably set Colin Farrell's career back a bit, which is awful, because I do remember, because I hadn't seen it, but I remember when it coming out, people, like, criticizing it as if Colin Farrell was the problem, but, like, he's a good actor. He's one of those people that's, like, a character actor trapped in a leading man body, you know, and he's finally getting recognized that because of his work as the Penguin, but, like, Colin Farrell is actually a decent actor. And this film just didn't let him show that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to cast someone, why can't you work around making that act, showcasing how good of an actor that is? Or, like, direct him better, because he can obviously do the job. But they just made him, like, a boring guy. Now, in fairness, that probably is more true to the Philip K. Dick novelette, because the guy was just an accountant. Whereas in, obviously, they changed the storyline to in the 1991 because they were like, shit, what could this guy's job be to explain why he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they were like, he's a buff construction worker. And that makes sense because that's why he's got the muscles, because he do construction.
It's also terrible because they're using jackhammers in a time where there's interplanetary travel.
Yeah.
With no hearing protection.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just for the scene so they can have a conversation.
That does feel very Philip K. Dick, though, in general. You know, the whole, it's the whole, you know, if you look at, like, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, like, how dilapidated everything on Earth is while they're, like, trying to save humans by having this colony on Mars or you know, or whatever, colonies on other planets, but, like, they haven't even managed to look after the Earth, never mind look after these other planets, which is a pretty good point to make because that's literally what's happening at this stage in our lives.
Oh my god, I didn't know this.
What?
Do you know what movie he was, I'm assuming, the lead? Yeah, he is.
Who?
Colin Farrell? Colin Farrell. Sorry, I said Colin Firth.
Are you looking at Colin Farrell and not Colin Firth at the moment?
Yes.
Okay.
The New World, 2005. He plays Captain John Smith.
Oh, no. Oh, Colin. He did Alexander the Great as well, right? He's had a weird career.
Him and Pocahontas.
Yeah. Oh, awkward. Colin. Why, listen, Colin, you're an Irishman. Why are you taking these roles as colonizers? Don't do that.
Banshees of Inisherin's fantastic.
Yeah, he's so good in that. He's so funny.
Yeah.
In Bruges, hilarious. Seven Psychopaths, he's quite funny in that as well. It's
great, that whole sequence, and like, there's a point where they got a spin-off on the Batman. The Lobster, obviously, big favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
Seven Psychopaths was also 2012.
Yeah, oh yeah. I literally went to the premiere of that
because
it was in the Toronto Film Festival the year I volunteered there. So I literally saw Colin Farrell in person in 2012 around the time this film came out. So maybe it didn't set his career back. Did he have like a setback in his career after this? Because I felt like there was just backlash against him for no reason. He seems like, by the way, Colin Farrell seems like he's actually a decent person as well. And nowadays, I think he did obviously, and is quite open about, he struggled with alcohol abuse for quite a few years. Not the only person to do it by a long shot. But he's
never heard of this movie. It did poorly.
Which movie?
Dead Man Down was his next movie after Seven Psychopaths, which was 2013.
No, I haven't heard of that.
And it cost 30 and made 19.
Oof. Million. Yikes.
Epic was also 2013.
That's, I don't think, was a good movie either.
Yeah, it cost 90 but made 268 because it's a kids' movie. Saving Mr. Banks.
Oh, that's a decent one. It's about Disney.
Yeah,
about Walt Disney.
Bit of money. Winter's Tale, I've never heard of. Looks like a romantic weird thing. Miss Julie, never heard of.
I've seen that and it's weird.
Well, it only made $1 million.
Yeah. It's a weird, like indie. It's him and Jessica Chastain.
Yeah. The Lobster is a great movie.
The Lobster is incredible. That's Yorgos Lanthimos, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then was Yorgos Lanthimos, did he do Killing of a Sacred Deer as well?
Let's have a look.
Because Killing of a Sacred Deer is another Colin Farrell
movie. 2 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor Things recently, which is apparently really, really good.
Is Colin Farrell in that?
No.
Oh, it's Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yorgos Lanthimos has made some strange movies. I think possibly all produced by A24, which makes sense because they produce some strange films.
Yeah.
No, that's good, though, because, like, I feel like those are the kind of movies that Colin Farrell should be in. And in fairness, I like him in Minority Report, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting him playing the bad guy in that, because he's, like, he's on the good side.
Yeah, that's the thing, because in Minority Report, I mean, we've already talked about Minority Report on the podcast, but, like, his character is, like, portrayed to be the villain at the beginning, and then you realize that actually he's just, like, a guy doing his job, and not in, like, the Nazi sense, but in the sense of, like, he just wants people to actually follow the rules, and when he realizes that it's not actually, you know, Tom Cruise's character, you know, Mr. Anderton or whatever, who's the problem, then he just is like...
Mr. Anderton.
Mr. him, he's just like, oh, this is the real problem, this is what I need to solve. So he's never, like, against Tom Cruise, per se, he's just, you know, trying to actually uphold the law.
Yeah.
So he gets a bad deal of it in that movie. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what there is to say about these films. I would recommend, having seen it for the first time, I would recommend people watch the 1990 Total Recall. But you can just pretend the remake doesn't exist, to be perfectly honest. It certainly doesn't add anything. It's probably a down point in all of those actors' careers. Because it's got good actors. It's got Ethan Hawke, even if he's only in the director's cut.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell, Kate Beckinsale, Bryan Cranston is in it, Jessica Biel.
I was going to say, you know, forget the love interest.
The love interest, no, yeah, Jessica Biel. Bill Nye, was like, who plays the dad? John Cho. Yeah, it's a cool cast.
Yeah.
And they just like, and also they don't even really give, I was kind of annoyed they don't even really give Jessica Biel's character any agency, really.
She's just like
damsel.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, when she's driving in the high-speed car chase, she just gives him the wheel and then is like, okay, he's looking after us now.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean? You're the person rescuing him. And you're like, well, now I'm being rescued. It's like, no, like, keep being a badass. Whereas in the original, you have, like, a fight between the wife and Melina, and it's like a really cool good fight.
Yeah,
it's so good. I was like, wow, you know, you kind of expect in 1990 that this is going to be, like, a shitty cat fight, but, like, they're doing a great fight, you know, and it's Sharon Stone. I can't think of the actress who plays Melina in that one. But like, it's like proper choreographed martial arts. Like really good. And they obviously both put a lot of work into, you know, getting really fit for the film. And Sharon Stone does such a good job in that movie as well, by the way. I mean, I think we have mentioned it it was why she was cast in Basic Instinct. But, like, yeah, the female characters. Now, Kate Beckinsale does do a lot of shit in the...
Yeah, like, I think Kate Beckinsale, because she plays Laurie, who basically replaces both Sharon Stone and Michael Ironside's character,
yeah,
being both the wife and the badass officer who's, like, there to, like, fucking kill him.
Yeah, so she does get, like, extra kind of screen time and interesting, you know, action stuff to do.
Yeah, she's, like, awesome for a, you know, femme fatale, like, badass chick trying to kill the main guy.
Yeah.
But it does feel very much like she is... What's the... All of it, like, all the action is just very much over the top of, all these characters have plot armor, so these firefights, there's so much shooting
at each other where no one gets hurt.
Yeah, and you're just like, you're all terrible.
Except for that one scene in the 1991 where I was like, he's just been hit, like, by 1,000 bullets, and it turned out it was a hologram, and it's like, well, then the bullets should have gone through him and hit the other guy. It's like, what do you mean? Arnie going like, wah, 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 like he's being hit by bullets, and then he's like, ha, I'm a hologram. Which is also is funny.
Yeah. I think my other favorite line from that movie is the fight between them and Benny, the taxi driver, in the drill.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I'm gonna drill you, sucker! And then he pulls out, like, the equivalent of, like, a jackhammer, but, like, the drill version.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, Benny, screw you! And stabs him through the door with it. It's just, like, all of those scenes are fantastic. It's like, how did the thing get here? Aliens build it! So they're, like, running. Because it's very much like he gives you the minimum amount of information, but he gives you the entire story.
Aliens build it.
Yeah. Where did the thing come from? The aliens build it. How are you going to kill Benny? You're going to screw him with a fucking giant drill.
I'm sad that there's no Benny in the remake.
What, with his 5 kids to feed? And his craving for a third arm.
Even though he has a third arm.
He does.
He's got 3 arms. 3 hands. It's no, he's just a funny comic relief kind of character, and then, like, turns on him for seemingly no reason.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's playing into this idea that, like, you know, is this all just a paranoid delusion because everyone is turning on him?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, even just the cab driver is a secret agent, you know? You're like, is this what's happening? Or is this just, you're having this weird psychosis episode in Recall. Schizoid
embolism or whatever they call it. Yeah, the
schizoid embolism. And that's the other thing, is that they don't even show it happening in the original. They cut to the other room and the guy gets a call about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, you get to see the whole procedure in this one. And, you know, but again, they do try to throw you off the scent by, you know, the guy only being like, oh, no, wait a second, you are a secret agent, like, after they've injected him.
Yeah.
But then it's just weird.
Yeah, it's a very weird sequence. I think, yeah, just every scene and, like, pacing is just so much better in the original.
Mm. And even things like, even the things that don't make sense in the original are still better than
like what?
Well, like, the whole, like, what he decides he's going to do at the end is just, like, he superheats some ice to give Mars an atmosphere all of a sudden. Is his big plan.
Aliens build it.
The aliens build it.
Yeah.
But his plan, but he somehow knows that that's what it does, and then, even though he hasn't got his memory back, and then he's like, don't worry, it'll be fine. Everyone, those people who are running out of oxygen in 2 seconds will be fine when the atmosphere appears. And it's like, how quickly does atmosphere form? And it doesn't make any sense, but somehow works. Even though he's, like, writhing on the floor, decompressing for, like, 10 whole minutes. But, like, I barely even know, having, like you said, watched it yesterday, what the conceit is of the remake? What's he doing? Blowing up some RoboCops?
They blow up the RoboCops.
And that's it.
And then the lift.
Yeah.
And kill Copenhagen.
Okay.
Copenhagen? What is his name?
Carhagen, I think?
Yeah.
They just, like, blow up some chappies.
Yeah.
They just blow up some chappies.
They blow up all the chappies.
And then it's like, and it's Brian like,
Cranston,
it's and like,
the elevator.
It's like, whoa, these guys stopped an invasion of police robots. Where were they invading? The colony?
Yeah.
How is that an invasion? That's like a military takeover.
Of a place that is already being controlled by the other side, and they clearly don't have their own independent government, because otherwise they wouldn't be calling themselves the colony.
Yeah. It's just, it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't actually solve any issues.
Yeah.
They just blew up some cops that weren't even alive to begin with.
And there's no mention of, like, sky travel not being a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can still invade countries without giant, like, physics-defying elevators that go through the center of the Earth. People have been invading people for decades using boats.
So there's not really, you're just like, okay, and? Whereas in that one, you're like, okay, this is strange, but I guess you did it.
Yeah.
But also, you've done the blue skies on Mars, and you get the girl and save the whole planet or whatever, alien, you know.
Alien artifacts of Mars, blue sky. Don't want to spoil it for you, but yeah.
Yeah, so he's gotten everything that they promised him in Recall, and also everything the doctor said would happen, but also, like, seemingly has potentially gone through all this in real life, and you don't know whether it's real or not. And then it fades to white because maybe he's been lobotomized, or maybe that's just the end of it. Whereas in the other one, you're like, okay, cool. I guess he blew up some robots. The end.
Yeah. He's freed us from our employment. We'll enjoy several decades of recession, depression, massive decline.
Yeah, he literally just, like, destroyed his own livelihood.
Yeah.
Because his job was, like,
secret agent.
No, but his job was...
That was his job, though.
But his job that he used to actually earn money was... I mean, it's bad. He's destroyed his unemployment either way. Because if you're saying it's his job as secret agent, he killed the guy who was his boss.
Here's a question.
If you're saying his job is building the police robots, he destroyed that whole industry.
Yeah. Here's another question for you.
Yeah.
So the colony basically is Southeast Asia.
Yeah, except it's in Australia.
Yeah. And then... The Northern Europe is the only other surviving part. Where does the food come from? Do we see them eating?
You are not growing fruit in Australia.
But you don't see like any land. It is just buildings built on like rivers.
Yeah.
There is no land
Maybe
there.
Maybe they're just eating the people from the colony. Maybe it's why we never see the mutants in this version. They're just being eaten. I don't think we even see someone eat, do we?
I don't think so.
Now I'm trying to question do we actually see anyone eat in the movie?
Because, like, the other one, they've got, like, breakfast and, like...
Yeah. I don't remember seeing if I saw anyone eat. I wasn't looking out for it, obviously. But, like...
We'll start our own website where we just list things that people eat.
I can almost guarantee you that in the novelette, he will have described the food they were eating. Because Philip K. Dick does that shit. To the point, like, that's the whole plot, you know, the whole, like... The reason for the title in Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep is that, like, you know, all the animals on Earth are gone, so people are, like, paying for android versions of pets to, synthetic pets, and he's like, you know, and he wishes that he could afford a fake sheep.
Yeah.
You know? So, the question is he an android or is he not? Because he is definitely dreaming of electric sheep. But it's, you know, there's a whole discussions about, you know, how livestock have disappeared and you know, and maybe on the colonies on other planets they're getting to eat meat, even if it's synthetic meat or whatever, versus, like, here, this, you know. So, like, I assure you Philip K. Dick has considered it. But it doesn't sound like probably the people who made the remake have considered food.
Yeah, it's not a thing most people actually genuinely consider when it comes to world building. But, like, I think...
think you should when it's like you're saying, like, that's what I'm saying. 90% of the Earth has become uninhabitable.
Yeah, it's like, then what are people eating each other? Like, the entire premise of spoilers for a movie that's unrelated, the entire point of Soylent Green...
I mean, you say spoilers. I think the one thing everyone knows about Soylent Green is Soylent Green is people.
The fact that scene happens in the last literal seconds of the movie is bananas. Because there's so much more movie before that.
Yeah, yeah. And yet the bit that's gotten into the general zeitgeist is just Soylent Green is people.
It's bizarre. It even goes to, like, it's such an interesting point of call in Star Trek, because obviously in Star Trek, everyone knows they have replicators that can replicate food, to the point where in Deep Space Nine, Sisko, his dad is running a restaurant on Earth that refuses to use replicated food, so it's like real food grown on the Earth.
Yeah.
And that's the joke that ongoes throughout Picard's, the Picard spin-off show. Because Picard's, like, whole family, he's French and they own wineries. And apparently his wine is terrible.
Right.
And that's, like, a running joke in this show as well, as everyone's like, oh, thanks for giving me your wine. I'm going to put it over there with all the other special things because it's apparently terrible wine.
Right.
But, yeah, I just feel like, yeah, when you, like, wipe out everything and you're worried about, like, he's just evil for evil's sake. I'm going to go take over the colony because they're rebels.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just hungry and have poor, like, really bad jobs.
Yeah.
Like, maybe if you just fix that, when people are happy, they tend not to rebel against things, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe if you supplied people with the basic necessities of life, they wouldn't be trying to blow up stuff.
How dare you suggest common sense?
No. Like, it's literally probably 90% of the problems we face in the real world.
Yeah, yeah.
As if you just gave people what they needed. Oh, but that's socialism. Fuck off.
Universal basic income.
Yeah.
If everyone had a universal income, then people could do the jobs that they actually care about doing. People would still work to get more money, but, like, no one would be starving on the streets. you wouldn't have these, you know, issues that people perceive with socialism stuff where they're like, oh, you know, everyone's not getting jobs because they want to get on the benefit or whatever. But like, if you didn't set like a requirement that you can't work and that's when you get money, and you just gave people like a universal basic, like everyone gets this money, if you want more than that money, you do this, then that corruption wouldn't be happening as much anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's almost like if you want your society to exist, like, where in a capitalist world where we have to pay money for things, people should be given some money.
It's also, know? Like, this constant argument that illegal immigrants is a cause of, like, the downfall of the American economy. And it's like, well, they're the pay ones... more taxes than Amazon do.
Yeah, yeah. They're propping up the American economy.
So maybe it's your billionaire friends who should pay taxes and not the people who, like, mm-hmm. snuck into your country on a, like, weird... You know, oh, my parents were illegal immigrants and then had me, so I had no choice. I've never lived anywhere in my, entire life. Ah, no, you're an illegal immigrant. Like, oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, it's...
You know, we have to keep all the manufacturing in Southeast Asia because those tiny children are the only ones that can screw the tiny screws into your iPhone.
Yikes. But why can't we... shoot those children through the core of the earth to the richer countries to make the stuff there?
Because you can't shoot people through the core of the planet. Look, go find the Soviet experiment where they dug the world's deepest hole, and it is nowhere near even like the Mariana Trench. And rocks do weird shit. They act like liquids, they're super hot, the pressure is way too high. Like,
also, I mean, they didn't do great research in terms of, like, actually figuring out where if they, like, dug straight through from the UK down, you'd end up just in the middle of the Antarctic Ocean.
It's also, I don't think you it's actually, make it to, like...
Southern Ocean.
It's not in a straight line, because then it would pass through the core of the planet.
They claim that it does pass through the core. They're, like, entering the core.
Yeah. It's so dumb.
But I know for a fact that New Zealand, which is further south than Australia, if you went straight through the earth to the other side, you'd be in Portugal.
Yeah.
Which means for Australia, it would be somewhere in the Mediterranean, I guess, or north of Africa, more likely, if you were digging straight through.
You can't. Don't work. Doesn't work. Never work. It's not a solution. Like, it's the deepest hole humanity's ever dug, and it's, so shallow. Mm-hmm. If you shrunk the planet down to the size of a pool table ball, cue ball, billiards ball, it'd be like, you wouldn't even be able to feel, like, Mount Everest or the Mariana's Trench or anything. It'd feel smoother than one of those.
Yeah.
And we'd even dig it down as far as the Mariana Trench. And this is when the Soviets were like, oh, let's just throw money at weird things. Maybe we'll find something there.
Yeah.
And just dug a hole. Got weird. Mm-hmm. Got real weird. Mm-hmm. How do you even dig a hole that big?
Mm-hmm.
Do you dig a smaller hole and then another hole?
Who wants to get together and dig a big hole? Who's got some land we can dig a big hole in?
You don't need a permit to dig a big hole.
You don't need a permit to dig a big hole.
Yeah.
I mean, you do if it's on public land.
Yeah, you can. All right. In the 20-year anniversary of this movie, we're going to meet in Australia and we're going to dig a big hole.
We're going to dig a big hole, see where it goes. Someone buy some land in the outback and we'll...
Yeah, I think you can only lease it because of the whole gold mining right thing.
Right, that makes sense.
We'll just claim it's a gold mine and dig a big hole.
Dig a big hole. See how far it goes.
You just eventually reach, like, a certain amount of footage and you just wouldn't be able to dig any further without, like, specialized tools.
Well, then we get the specialized tools and we dig a big hole.
We'll have to get the Germans involved because they built the largest digger in the world.
Well, then why can't we do it in Germany instead of down in Australia?
Because then we'd end up in a different place. Because that's how digging straight down works.
But okay, so we got to pick somewhere in Australia and dig straight down and see if we where we end up. And then that's where we create our United Federation of
Colonies. Britain. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
The only facts for the about the movies for us?
Yeah, Lisa. Not a lot. What have I got here? Oh yeah, so originally Ronald Shusett and Dan O'Bannon started working on the screenplay for the 1990 movie in the 70s.
Wow.
And then they realized it was going to be too expensive and difficult to make by the standards of special effects and budget at the time. So they delayed working on the story, and in the meantime, they were like, oh, we have this other idea about a space monster terrorizing a crew. Mm. So they made a different movie first, and that movie became Alien.
Yeah.
Which is fun. Arnold Schwarzenegger was just super impressed by Sharon Stone and how much dedication she showed training for her character. So he referred to her consistently as the female Terminator. And she got inducted into the Stuntwoman Association as an honorary member because of the work she did in this film. Which is cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mentioned this briefly, but it was Arnold Schwarzenegger himself who came up with the idea of Quaid being a buff construction worker, because in the novelette, he's Quail is described as like an average looking accountant.
Yeah.
And because of that, they didn't want Schwarzenegger to audition originally, and then when Arnold Schwarzenegger actually convinced Mario Casar to buy the script rights and then change the drafts so that the character was more like him so that he could get the role. Which is a fun... You might have just been like, I really want to play the role in this movie, so I'm going to get someone else to buy the rights to the film and then change the script so the character is described as being like me so I could be in it. Which is very funny to me. But they also thought that it made a cool contrast to the movie by having it be like a physically powerful character who's been made vulnerable by having his mind taken away from him. The shot of Quaid traveling by train on Mars and with the sweeping move out over the Martian mountains was almost going to be cut from production because it was not. It was going to cost too much. It's like the most expensive shot in the movie.
Yeah.
So I will say, I didn't take this down, but I remember reading it that like all of the Martian scenes are, or like the, when you see like big shots of Mars, it's all miniatures that were based on real photographs of Martian landscape.
Yeah.
So they built like miniatures of this Martian landscape and then built like all the, you know, architecture into it to make the Mars city and stuff, which is very cool. But, yeah, so they almost didn't make this scene because of budgetary concerns. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger went and spoke to the studio head directly to be like, you need to give the production enough money to complete this shot because it's going to be so cool. And it is. Like, yeah. It, like, really makes it that you're like, whoa, look at this. Because it's, like, him in the train and then it pans out and then shows you the whole of this, you know, Martian colony. So I thought that was cool. And then I didn't take a lot of notes for the other one. Oh, I will say, I'm going to say this because I didn't take these down because I didn't think they were relevant, but I'm going to say it because it's kind of relevant to, trivia for the 2012 one, that like almost all of the cast and crew got really sick from food poisoning while making the 1990 one because they shot it primarily in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't because he had previously shot Predator down there and had gotten food poisoning on that. So he insisted on having all of his own catering shipped in from the USA, whereas everyone else ate the Mexican caterer's food and got really sick. Paul Verhoeven ended up, I believe, hospitalized and like they wouldn't pay him to not be on set or whatever. So he was like, they had to have like medics on set with him looking after him because he was like dying of food poisoning. But then for the 2012 one, the final fight scene, the water in it, in that scene, was all infected, so Bryan Cranston got pink eye in both eyes.
Oh, wow.
To the point that Colin Farrell, on like a talk show, I think on Graham Norton show, joked that he was so jealous of Bryan Cranston's acting that he pooped in the water to give him pink eye. And then the only other thing I had there was that the single take fight scene was performed by Colin Farrell himself. He didn't have a stunt double doing it. They took 22 tries to get it perfect. But I thought that was kind of cool. Because we do like single take fight scenes.
Yeah, yeah.
We've covered a couple of them at this stage. Yeah, so that was it. And then budget and box office-wise, the original, the 1991, the budget was $65 million and it made $261 million in box office.
Right.
And the remake, the budget was $125 million and it made $198 million in box office. So probably just covered the marketing costs on top of the production. Even though it was an expensive movie, and then I guess also just didn't do great. Yeah. Which is a shame, but it's also not a very good movie, so I don't feel really bad about it.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm glad that the other one did do really well, because it's very fun, and good, and I feel true to Philip K. Dick's kind of general goal of making everyone question reality.
Yeah.
so I feel like he would have liked that one. Do you have anything else you wanted to talk about with these?
No, I think that pretty much wraps it up. If you go to our website, ittakes2.co.nz, you will be able to find our RSS feed for all of our social media. Also be able to join our Discord channel and sign up for our mailing list.
Mm-hmm. You sure can do all those things, even though Nick said them in very strange ways.
Yep.
Because you'd be joining our Discord server, and our social media is not on our RSS feed, but all those things are on there.
Look, I've never been to our own website in my life. I have been to it. I've just never signed up for any news about myself, because it feels weirdly egotistical. Hey, what am I up to?
Yeah, the RSS feed is for episodes. but our social media accounts are also linked on their website. Thanks so much for listening.
And a reminder, share the episode. And if you're cool with it, leave a review. Because sharing an episode means more than you think it does. Because at least one other person see it. And there's two people. And then four people. And then forever. Till all the people that have phones. There's more phones than people. So that means there'll be more listens than people in the world.
Also, you don't have to have a phone to listen to this.
That's true.
You can listen on our website or on any podcatcher or on YouTube, all of which, or most of which, are available on a browser. I think there are podcatchers that are app only, but like mostly you can listen on a computer.
Thanks for joining us.
Or a TV.
That's true.
You can listen on your TV or on your Google Home, which is, I think, what my mom does. All right. Goodbye. Bye.